Welcome again to the 1955 Kailua Study Series. We are on Chapter 11, Seek and Realize God, Not Effect. Of course, we've been spending more than a couple of weeks on Chapter 10 and the exercise that was given to us to have 12 periods a day of meditation for 3 to 4 minutes at a time, in which we go to God only for a realization of God's grace and for nothing else, taking no thought but allowing God to reveal itself to us. And so here in chapter 11, after having given that exercise to the students, Joel says, "This is a very strange work that we are getting into. Never anywhere in literature do you find that a community or a group of people follow these principles into the inner, deeper realms." Now, of course, that's his vision, to have a group of people on earth that will follow these principles and demonstrate the presence of God. But he'll get into that later in this chapter. However, he states, "I'm wondering who I'm kidding, or if it is I myself who am being kidded by a desire and a love to see men free, to see the world free." And I have to stop and ask myself, was he right? Was he right? I have to wonder, what happened to those original students? What if there was, well, let's even say that there was Virginia and Herb and Lorraine and several others. Let's say that they had all attended these classes. Well, we know that some of them went out and went on to be teachers themselves. However, what about those students that they had? Why didn't they raise up teachers? Why didn't this really become the force that it should have been if this whole group of people were raised out of the letter to the Spirit? Yes, I know Virginia has one or two that started teaching, and I know that Herb has one or two, but we're talking, I think when Joel was around, there was 65,000 students. It just makes me wonder, where are they? What happened? Anyway, to continue with this chapter, and it also makes me wonder, are we that group? What will happen if we check in on this group studying this Kailua study series? What will happen if we check in on our group in the years to come? Will we find that we have acted as the eye that is lifted up and lifts up this world consciousness to another level? Well, more will be revealed. So he moves on into quoting Henry Victor Morgan and his poem, which is quite nice. And then he says, "A master of fate is the individual who has attained a state of consciousness wherein nothing and no one in this world is of any importance to him or her, where the only importance is that which takes place when one arrives above the sea of thought. You only stand in the high places in consciousness when you have risen above the sea of thought." And of course, thought encompasses everything that is in this world, everything that can be seen, heard, tasted, touched, smelled, and thought upon. This world is thought or concepts, and my kingdom is above all that. So, what struck me as important here was nothing and no one in this world is of any importance to him or her anymore. The only importance is that which takes place when one arrives above the sea of thought. I know that makes people uncomfortable. However, my experience is when you rise above the sea of thought, you don't become less loving. On the contrary, you become even more love itself, expressing to those about you and around you. So, losing interest in everything and everyone in this world, and having interest only in what takes place above the sea of thought, does not make you less attentive at all. It makes you more attentive. So it's not something to be fearful of, to die to this world and rise above the sea of thought to my kingdom makes you more loving, more generous, more philanthropic. On the next page he says, anything in the world to which we attach undue importance and for which we make an effort to get, gain, or try to hold on to, those are considered baubles by the people, the individuals who have attained that place in consciousness above the sea of thought. At first, he says, that would make it appear that we are becoming somewhat like the Hindus who stay in meditation and let their bodies rot away and their country fall to pieces in slavery. But that's not it at all, not at all. You do not rise above thought to become an ascetic or to become an idle daydreamer. You rise above human thought to where the divine thought, the divine activity of consciousness reveals itself, and then you become, oh, ever so much more active on the outer plane. Now, do you see the difference here? In his book, A Parenthesis in Eternity, he talks about the middle path. He talks about how India, which should have had one of the richest spiritual heritages of any nation on earth, how they adopted the attitude that this world out here is an illusion, and they developed a do-nothing attitude and let it just waste away. But we're not doing that. We're not doing that at all. Because we have discovered this world out here is real. It's the kingdom, and we're standing in it. This world that's the illusion is the sea of thought. And in rising above that, we begin to behold the world of God's creation. In other words, the world as it really is. So we're not becoming ascetics. We're not making that mistake. Again, he says, what I have seen personally is that students do not readily grasp this, that it is necessary to release the hold on or the desire for effects and center consciousness only on achieving the realization of cause. In fact, it is so difficult that it has never been achieved in the whole history of the world by any people. This was really a deep dream of his. But we'll get into that. The point is that this entire chapter, this entire series of talks, is to enable you to rise above that sea of thought, to be one of those people, those few people, that will achieve in the whole history of the world the ability to center your attention on cause, and not look for any effects whatsoever. You will be one who really does seek first the kingdom and his righteousness, and let all these other things take care of themselves. You will discover all these other things are included. And he drives the idea home by saying the entire world is suffering because of an inability to grasp this very point. And the point is to center consciousness only on achieving the realization of cause. Now, the realization of cause doesn't mean that you agree with this theory intellectually. You know that by now. The realization of cause means that you have the actual feel of cause in your meditation. You feel it. You commune with it. So he says, let us see how this works out in practice. Then he brings out the tumbler, and he explains that the inside and the outside of the tumbler are one. He says that this is the secret of withinness. All through the ages, duality has separated us from our good. But it is not duality, it's a sense of duality, because there is no duality. You remember, I think it's in the, well, I know it's in the book The Infinite Way, but I think it's in the chapter Our Real Existence. He talks about the whole problem is believing that there's two worlds, a my kingdom and a this world. You see, we're coming out of those that believe in a this world that needs patching up, or even in a this world that needs rising above. We are discovering that there really is no this world. That's a concept about my kingdom. And as we surrender those concepts, as we become still, like the morning sun of dawn lighting up the sky, as we become still to the concepts, then we become aware of the kingdom in our midst. It really is in our midst. And if we follow these suggestions from the last chapter and take these 12 periods a day, that's the technique to rise above the sea of thoughts, above the sea of concepts, so that we can become aware of the living kingdom in which we dwell and which dwells in us. So getting back to the tumbler, he says, we might ask the question, where does the outside leave off and where does the inside begin? The secret of life is oneness, and oneness isn't something you bring about. Oneness is a state of being. Oneness is achieved in realization. Every time he uses that word realization, he means a feeling, an inner feeling with your spiritual discernment of your oneness. In other words, when we had that chapter on body, we learned that the word is manifest as invisible flesh, and it appears as form. All right? So, in looking at the tumbler and asking yourself, where does the outside leave off and the inside begin, you apply that same thing. God, the Word, was made flesh and dwells among us right now as that invisible flesh, or Christ. This Christ flows out here into form. It forms itself. Where does the Word as Christ leave off and you begin? You see, there is no division. The division is a concept in your mind. This is a path to rise above or out of concepts into the experience of what you really are. Once we can see that this glass of the outside is the glass of the inside, we can see the relationship existing between God and man. Actually, there is no such thing as God and man, any more than there is a outside and inside separate from each other. So you see, when we read in the chapter that the Word is made flesh, invisible flesh, and dwells among us, your spiritual feeling of this invisible flesh is realization. When you feel it, you've realized it, and then it appears out here as form. Every tiny bit of it that you realize appears out here as form. Only you call it a healing or an improvement in the form out here, or an opportunity that just comes out of nowhere, or the right person, meeting the right person at the right time. You see, every bit of going within without having any concepts, any words or thoughts, rising above those concepts, being still, and having an inner glimpse of that invisible Word made flesh as Christ, every little piece of that that you realize, that you feel, catch the feeling of it, will appear out here. And in that way, you transform your world into the kingdom here and now. Or you become aware that your world always was the kingdom. You were just seeing it as something else. So he says, God is our invisible selfhood, and we are the externalized form or expression of that inside God. Now, that's what we just explained. The Word is made manifest as invisible flesh, which appears out here as you. You see, it's all one flowing. It is the Word manifest and appearing. It's still the Word. That's the way he says it in that chapter in the Infinite Way. It's still the Word. But you have to catch the feel of this, the inner spiritual discernment of it. And that's only caught when you learn how to meditate without words and thoughts. All right, you see how all this ties together? And we are on the path to doing this. And he is wondering if there's a group of people that can do this at the same time together. And I think there is. So, we are not two, we are only two in function. God is the creative principle, the source, the activity, and the law of our being. And our being is that same thing in expression or manifestation. We as individuals then receive our life, law, cause, substance, reality, and continuity from the inside of ourselves. And that activity on the inside of ourselves appears externally as the harmony of our being. All right. But all this is in the realm of theory, unless you've practiced chapter 10 and come to that place where you are beginning to catch glimpses or the spiritual inner feeling of this. That's what transforms each little piece. It's like when I was a kid and I had a kaleidoscope, and I'd look in that thing and I could really entertain myself for an hour or two. I'd give that little thing a turn and, ooh, a brand new picture, a brand new pattern. Right? It's just like that. You have your inner glimpse, you catch a feeling of some facet of that diamond called Christ, and it appears out here as a brand new world. The world is new when Christ has entered in your awareness. All right. Again, God is our inner selfhood, is the quality, quantity, cause, and reality, the law and the substance of our being. We have none of ourselves. But we have none less than God. Isn't that strange? We have none of ourselves, but we have none less than God. All that God is, I am. You see, the whole difficulty, the whole problem has been you believing that there's a you. And do you begin to catch a little bit of what it means now to die daily to you? Well, he's going to get into that. The difference in demonstration of this principle lies in the difference of awareness. If one of us has one degree more of awareness of this truth than the other, his or her demonstration goes beyond the other. The degree of our demonstration is in the degree of our awareness. Now, awareness is not thought, and it's not words. That's why it's vital that you grasp the principles and continue to practice that meditation that was described in Chapter 10, 12 times a day, 3 to 4 minutes of listening. It's in that listening, in gaining that ability to meditate that way beyond words and thoughts, that you will catch glimpses, you will catch the spiritual feeling, you will have the awareness. Your mind will no longer be a thinker, it will be an avenue of awareness. And that then will transform the picture out here, just like the kaleidoscope. Now, the moment an individual believes that they have a quality of their own, they have set up a sense of limitation. All right, that sets aside the demonstration. Yes, we're talking about dying daily. But when you realize that it is God itself, my inner self, that is appearing outwardly, in that degree, we've learned to die daily. This is the meaning of the Master's statement, deny thyself. Deny that you of yourself have any qualities. Now, this is an important point here. We try to practice spiritual principles in the early days to improve our health, our wealth, our supply. But the very act of trying to practice principles in that way keeps you in a sense of duality or sense of separation. There is no duality, but your very practicing principles is keeping you there because you're not practicing them correctly. So here he points out that you have no health or wealth or wisdom, glory or possibilities or strength or character or potentialities. And we go the next step and realize that your own inner selfhood, since God is your selfhood, your own inner being, which is not in or out, your own inner being is the cause, the reality, the allness of that which appears outwardly as you or me. You see that? Again, it must be an awareness. You must catch the feel of that. And the feel is not an emotion. No. That's of the mind. The feel is a faculty called a soul faculty of spiritual discernment. So, when you realize this, that God is the cause appearing as you, and it's still God, in this relationship we can relax. We don't have to work that hard. We can relax because now all that God is permitted to flow into being. You see? Without the word I getting in the way. Now, here's the funny thing about it, he says. It takes away your ability to pray. You can't anymore pray to ask God to bless an activity. You can't even ask God to be with you on your journeys because we've done away with you. We've done away with me. We have no business now apart from God's business. We have no activity. We have no journey. There is no we to make a journey. Since this inner self is wherever I am, then of course it is living itself. In the Bhagavad Gita it says, consciousness is ever all itself. But now this must become a living reality to us. Something that we experience as we rise above the sea of thoughts. Now, he says, if we turn within and receive there an assurance, a feeling, a click, an awareness of God's presence, then we have no need anymore to pray for anything. So, that awareness of God's presence is itself the assurance. You see, we are changing our old ideas of prayer, aren't we? We're throwing them right out the window. And that was the significance of the work in Chapter 10 that should go on now for our lifetime. If that contact is made, is there any possibility of anything going wrong with our demonstration? No, there's not. As long as you don't outline to God what your demonstration should be. come consciously into the awareness, the actual feeling, which I have circled and underlined. The realization, the click of God's presence, is automatically to bring that presence and power into our experience. Yes, it's just remember that kaleidoscope. Every time you have that inner release, I don't like click. When you have that inner, ah, there you are, I feel you. Or you realize, have the sudden realization of a facet of Christ that you never knew before, or you have the actual feeling of the presence, it automatically brings that presence and power into form, which appears out here. So you see why you must rise above the sea of thought, because thinking won't make this so. You must rise above the sea of thought into an actual consciousness, an actual awareness, an actual feeling of God's presence. And then all these other things are included. Again, seek me only. Seek to realize me. Seek to have the conscious awareness of my presence only. Then all these things will be added or to be found or will be found to be included. Living, moving, and having our being in the conscious awareness of God, all things become evident and visible to us. But now you and I understand what those two little words, conscious awareness, means, don't we? It no longer means just stopping at your desk at work and thinking while you're on your coffee break of some scripture of God. That's just not going to cut it, is it? That's all in the realm of the mind, and that's why nothing's changed. Now, we must rise above the sea of thought now, through the practice of meditation, listening without words and thoughts, to catch a real awareness of God. And it can be just a tiny facet of God, but it's a real awareness. And then the kaleidoscope changes inside, and boom, the picture out here is new. Behold, I shall make all things new, and you have just heard how. Again, he says, that would be a strange thing if a group of people should come into the world today actually making a God contact. And up here in the margin I wrote, there's no outer demonstration, remember? For you and I, there's no longer any outer demonstration. Just the inner feeling of the reality of being. And then when we come back down from the mountain of high consciousness above thought, I within appears as form, improved form out here. And that's the whole thing. Now, to be able to be still and know that the I of me is God, the invisible selfhood of me is God, that God is my invisible being, my interior selfhood, my internal nature, character, quality, and being, and all that God is flowing from me into visible manifestation and expression, automatically sets us free. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. All that God is, I am. All that the Father has is mine. The place whereon I stand is holy ground. And then never, never take a thought for what you shall eat or drink, or wherewithal shall you be clothed. So, we understand now that the truth that you know that makes you free is not a knowing with the mind, is it? It's a different kind of knowing. I've said that before in my talks, but I certainly didn't explain it as well as this study series is. So after you have had that, let's say that you're being confronted with the appearance of a problem in your life. So you sit down, you say, I'm going to practice what that Joel says to do. So you leave the problem outside your temple, you sit down, immediately you start to think of some scripture, and you say, aha, no, I'm practicing chapter 10. I'm not allowed to do that. So I'm just going to sit here, be still, rise out of the concepts, the words and the thoughts. What was that? Oh, yes. Father, thy grace is my sufficiency. and suddenly you feel the presence descend upon your shoulders or flow through you. And you know you've had that release. Yes. Thank you, Father. And now you open your eyes, you go about your business. Don't peek. Don't go back and take thought, he says. Never take thought for whether the leg hurts or the finger or the head or the heart. Never take thought for an activity of the body. Let the body normally and naturally manifest all that you have just realized. All you have to do is realize it, feel it, catch the awareness of it, and you're done. That's it. And then don't check out here to see if it's showing up yet. It's tricky, but you'll learn to do it. He says, when I say that God is my being, I am speaking a universal truth which comes into your experience when you say, God is my interior being. Why must you say that? Because you must experience it, and I can't experience it for you. I can reveal to you, but I cannot experience it for you. So, you must within yourself come to the realization, the actual feeling of it. This same I of which he speaks is the I which I am. But now you know it's an interior awareness, isn't it? And I love this next part. There is only one interior. That's beautiful. I've been thinking, pondering that a lot lately. Ever since we read that chapter, that really hit me. The Word of God is manifest as invisible flesh. And in my meditation, I often feel this invisible flesh, this invisible Christ. Here he's saying, there's only one. That invisible Christ that I'm feeling, which is the reality of me, is the reality of you. There's only one Son. God is manifest as the Son, which appears as infinite form and variety, but there's only one interior. But it appears infinitely as your individual being and mine, right? And now here is his vision. I'll read it to you again. I feel it's important. I know he really wanted to see this, and I'll tell you a little more in a minute. Now, is it possible that we as a group of students actually will bring ourselves to living by actual spiritual contact? That's why I said that I wonder if this is a proving ground or a testing ground. Is there such a thing possible in all this world that a group of people so peculiar will appear on earth as will seriously accept the fact that of themselves they are nothing? They are but the outer half, which if there weren't an inner half would leave them less than nothing. Is there such a thing as a body of students which we call Infinite Way students? Is there such a thing as a body of students who can bring themselves to that point of realization where they would live by the Spirit? I live, yet not I. Christ liveth my life. Is there such a thing? Is it possible that a group of people will evolve on earth? Because if there is, that would set the pattern for all the world. You see, there is a statement in Scripture, one moment of silence would be heaven, would be eternity. So it would be that one moment of silence from desire or thought or thing or word would translate us from human beings into divinity. All right. His vision is this, that there will be a group of people that will catch this, that is, living by this inner awareness, living by cause, living by the Word, an entire group of people so dedicated that they no longer live by bread, but by the Word of God, which manifests through them and appears as form. That this group of people living this way would prove once and for all that a group of people can do this, that the world can do this, so that others coming in after them would be born into this new consciousness. This group of people would act like the 10 righteous men and lift the consciousness of humanity to the point where the next generation would be born into this consciousness, and we would effectively have heaven on earth. And that's a beautiful vision. And are we part of that? You betcha. The choice is yours. All you have to do is say, yes, I am dedicated to this. Again, the only thing that separates us from being God is the word I. But we can gradually die to that I. We can die daily to it. How? Well, never pray for anything except a deeper awareness of the activity and presence of God in our consciousness, and start our day or finish it with that inner contact. So, that's how you die daily. Now, again, there is no demonstration that's called mine. There is no my demonstration. Remember I shared with you a couple weeks ago that what came to me in meditation was the presence demonstrates itself. All right, there is no my demonstration, no my supply, no my wisdom, my health. All that sense of my is what perpetuates the problem. Now, we must discipline ourselves. You and I must train ourselves consciously to the point of realization or feeling that that which is appearing as my supply is God's supply. What appears as my health is God's health. What appears as my integrity is God's integrity. All right? It becomes necessary to prove the principle that we are living by cause and not by effect. When we do this, well, we're automatically loving our neighbor as ourselves, because here and there, there are those in the world who on the inner plane catch this light. And so we are a blessing, but we don't know who we are blessing. Whatever you know in secret is shouted from the housetop. Whatever it is that you internally realize, feel, you externally become evident as. What you do speaks so loudly, I can hardly hear what you say. All right, so that which you realize within blesses people, maybe on the other side of the world or on the other side of the veil. You do world work without even trying. There is no transfer of thought from one individual to another in this work. When you tune into me, you do not tune into a human being. No, in tuning into me, well, I merely tune into the Father for a realization of oneness. And when I feel that release, you feel it, because we are united in that oneness. Now, let's be clear on this, he says. If I go to God for a realization of God, or for the feeling, or for the awareness of God, then the result of that realization is whatever form of God is necessary in my experience. That's where omniscience comes in. If it's a new dollar, it appears as a new dollar. If it's a new foot, it appears as a new foot. If it's a new house, new business, it appears as those. But that is not my function to take thought about how it's going to appear. My function is to have that God contact. Then that God contact appears in my experience as person, place, thing, circumstance, condition, new ideas, new stories, new lessons, new houses, new anything and new everything. Now, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if we really, all of us, learned this? And again, his vision. He really wanted to see this happen. So, we turn in to make that contact until we feel it stirring, and then go on about our business, and become beholders of God appearing as form. Now, that's what happens. God appears as form. God appears as the form, transportation, or whatever you need. But remember, God's not transportation. God's not my automobile. Again, you must remember, the Word is made invisible flesh. That's God. It appears to the sense mind as automobile. So in that sense, yes, God appears as my automobile, but God's not my automobile. That's my concept of God. That's my concept of that invisible flesh made into form. You see that? That's so you won't fall in love with the form, but rather love the cause. Yes, that's what I wrote in the margin. God is not the form. God is the invisible substance of the form. So, God is the substance of all form. All right. On the next page, there's no harm in our disapproving of the way God runs the universe. That represents the degree of our unawareness of God. It shows us that we are outlining unconsciously what form our good shall appear as. Now, I had an experience a few years ago that my ex-wife was sick, and no matter how I meditated or prayed, nothing I did changed the picture, and I don't mind telling you, I was very upset and quite disapproving of the way God was running his universe. But you can see where I was outlining and wanting that awareness to appear as my wife's health, can't you? Okay. Here he is again, back to this vision. I wish that the names of everyone here were written in a box, and that you could check up on yourselves a year from now and see what's happened to you. Because this life really can be lived right here on earth now, in the 21st century, without ever saying a prayer or voicing one, thinking one for anybody on the face of the globe. Life can be lived as a very glorious experience with all of the added things. Isn't that amazing? Here in our spiritual studies, we've come to the place where we can quit praying. At least in the way that the world has prayed for thousands of years. Now we can come within and in the silence of our inner being, without words, without thoughts, without petitions of any kind, we can rise above the sea of thought and hear the thought of God, or receive the word spoken within, or receive the spiritual presence itself. That results in that word as invisible flesh appearing as form. Is it possible to have all of this without taking thought? It is possible to have all this without taking thought. It is more possible to have it without taking thought than it is with. It is more possible to have it without praying than it is with praying. And so it is with healings. It is possible to have real success in the healing work, at least a greater measure of success than would otherwise be the case, by only making contact with that Father within whenever called upon for help. Yes, I made a talk called Do Not Pray to God. And that's what I was trying to show you, was that principle, that it's more possible to have this without praying. So he's saying here in the healing work, the same principle applies. Someone calls you for help, it's the same thing. I know it doesn't make any sense. The ways of God are foolishness unto the human mind. But it's true. Someone calls upon you for help, you say, I'll help you. That's the end of them as far as you're concerned. You loose them and let them go. Now you sit down and realize, well, I can't pray. Isn't that what Joel did that very first day? Father, I don't know what to say. Oh, thanks, Joel, my headache's gone. And so you sit down and you say the same thing. I can't pray. but maybe I can be still enough to receive an impartation from within. And in the stillness, you receive an awareness, an actual feeling. You make that contact. There's a release. Okay, the work's done. It's done. You're done with that. Go on about your day. Go ahead and take the next case. Now you understand how Joel could meet 300 cases a day. He didn't spend an hour on each one, did he? Nope. He was in this frame of mind, this inner awareness, this inner listening, almost all the time. So the phone rang. He picked it up. I will be with you. I'll work for you. He hung it up. Ah, there's the impartation, the feeling of the presence. Phone rang again. He picked it up. See, it only took a minute or less. And that's where we are headed. We must. We must, if we're going to be this group of people he's envisioning. Whatever the name or nature of the claim, it can be more successfully met by turning from the picture, turning within, and making the contact, and letting the all-knowing intelligence, that Spirit of God within, find its way to the dividing of soul and spirit, letting that Spirit bear intercession. This becomes your way of life. It doesn't make any difference what the name or nature of the claim may be. It could be a sinful person or a sick dog. There is only one answer to it, and that is making that contact within. Then, wherever you find a degree of receptivity, oh, you will have your healings made evident in this world. And so, chapter 11 is really built on the foundation of chapter 10. You see why that is so important? I see chapter 10 as a pivotal point in this whole study, because if you get that, chapter 10, that ability to take those 12 times a day, 3 to 4 minutes, rising above the sea of thought until you receive an inner feeling, awareness, or impartation, or realization, or release, then you will have the answer. Really, then you will have the ability to make that contact with God. And should books someday be outlawed and burned, it won't matter to you, because you shall be taught of God from then on. You see that? That's the whole point of the infinite way, is to bring you above the letter into the conscious awareness of the Spirit, and then you shall be taught of the Spirit. Now, the next chapter, chapter 12, is just as wonderful, maybe more so, than chapter 10. And again, it's going to bring you even higher over that sea of concepts, that sea of thought, into the actual awareness, the feel of this interior Word as invisible flesh or Christ. And that's why it's called experiencing the Christ. So, I hope this helps. I'm glad to be moving forward again with this Kalua study series. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this talk, and now I'm afraid I am entertaining the same vision. Is there a group of people on earth that can live by these principles, by this Word made flesh appearing, that can really go within and live by cause? Are we that group? And I say we are. We can be the leavening that leavens the lump. We can be the vanguard that helps lift up the consciousness in preparation for a new humanity. Ah, but you didn't know your mission was that important. You have not chosen me, I have chosen you, says God. Will you answer? Thank you and blessings.